Welcome to the IAA Mobility Visionary Club podcast. Here we explore the intersection of technology, transportation, and sustainability. This podcast is created in collaboration with our knowledge partner, the Boston Consulting Group. In the Visionary Club podcast, our host is an AI-generated voice, but the insights and perspectives shared by our guests are purely human. Each episode features two visionaries who bring their diverse professional backgrounds and personal experiences to the table. Today, we welcome Gretchen Efkin, Director of Global Automotive Partnerships, Platforms and Ecosystems at Google, and Christiana Zorn, Senior Vice President of Product and Portfolio Strategy at Audi. Would you like to introduce yourselves briefly? Christiana, let's start with you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Christiana Zorn. And in fact, this is the first interview in my new position at Audi. So I've been the Senior Vice President Product and Portfolio Strategy since March this year. So in short, this means that my team and I manage at what point in time Audi puts which model on the road. So as you can imagine, the job is super exciting. It's about predicting what customers will expect from our cars in the future. And of course, all the topic of software and digital plays a central role. So I'm really happy to join the conversation today with Gretchen.
Thank you. How about you, Gretchen? Please introduce yourself.
Hello, and thank you for having me. I'm Gretchen Efkin. I lead Google's automotive partnerships for Android Auto. We work across the ecosystem to bring a seamless user experience into the vehicle. We partner with automakers, silicon providers, tier ones, and developers to bring a host of solutions into the car. Whether that's a projected mode where your phone is mirrored on the screen of your vehicle, or the operating system known as AAOS, where we provide embedded technologies, whether that's Google branded offerings like Google Maps, Assistant, or Play Store, or for OEMs who want a more customizable option, we provide component building blocks through API and SDK-based solutions. For the last 15 years or so of my career, I've worked at the intersection of technology and automotive, working to bring emerging technologies into auto and mobility ecosystems. I'm really excited to be here with Christiana today and look forward to a lively discussion.
Thank you. In this episode, our guests will share their knowledge and expertise on topics such as user experience and user acceptance, innovation, monetization, and software-defined vehicles. They will also provide personal anecdotes and insights that add a human touch to our discussions. Join us as we dive into the fascinating world of mobility and discover how it impacts our lives in ways we may have never imagined. Gretchen, Christiana, we have prepared questions for you. Please take turns choosing questions. Would you like to start, Gretchen?
Sure. Ecosystem level one, please.
How do you decide which products or services to develop in-house versus those that will incorporate third-party offerings?
Well, I think to develop a car and to bring it to market in a large scale and, of course, high quality that the customers expect is a very complex process. And of course, as the automakers, we do have a lot of experience in doing so. But at the same time, we also need to integrate third-party applications. And I do believe that for specific areas, having these corporations and integration of third-party applications is really key to success, because it's what the customers want from us. They want to integrate the digital world they know and they use every single day into the cars. And they want to have access to their applications in the cars, the look and feel they know from their smartphones. And we do this by, for example, integrating the Audi store for third-party applications. Secondly, I do believe that especially for regional corporations with local tech champions in China or in the US, it's even more important in order to develop just what the customers need from us in these specific regions for those specific markets. And I think, of course, we can pick up speed through those corporations. And at Audi, we do have a long history of having those corporations with tech players such as Google as well.
One thing I would add from the Android Auto perspective is that through an open source platform, we enable third-party developers to develop for the automotive context. And one of the things that our auto partners then do is can decide, you know, are there applications they'd like to preload in their vehicles or make available through the Google Play Store if they are partners with us for Google built-in services. So when you have that Play Store within the vehicle, the user has access to those third-party services like Christiana was speaking to that are present in other form factors in their life, whether that's how they get media content, you know, music or audio content, their favorite podcasts, et cetera. So that is one of the channels through which we enable third-party services within the vehicle.
Thank you. Please choose your next question.
How about user acceptance, level one?
What are the potential barriers to consumer adoption and acceptance of software-defined vehicles? And how can the industry address concerns related to complexity, trust, affordability, and user experience to encourage widespread adoption?
I think when we talk about the software-defined vehicle and user acceptance, we should first speak to what exactly we're talking about. A software-defined vehicle can mean a lot of different things. It can mean a vehicle that can accept over-the-air updates or OTAs, as they're known, to improve the infotainment system. It can also talk to the full software architecture that helps power the vehicle from the operating system, safety critical systems, and beyond. So I think it's important to define which pieces of a software-defined vehicle we're talking to when we speak about user acceptance. And also important to think through the lens of a software-forward vehicle. So if we just look at this through the lens of the infotainment experience, we know that consumers appreciate the ability to update services in their vehicle in a very similar way that they do on their on a smartphone, on a tablet, and even now more frequently on a television at home, where we're used to updating the operating system to improve the features and functionality, you know, of those form factors. And the same then goes for the vehicle. One example that I would give is where our vehicles that we help support with automakers that have Google built-in services, they benefit from Google Maps, which is updated every 2 weeks. You know, an improvement is pushed out. So that allows us to ensure that maps are up to date with whether there's a new bike lane has been established or perhaps an intersection signal has changed. You know, we can update that in real time and have that real time service available for the consumer. And that is something that has high user acceptance and adoption. As we look at more sophisticated use cases, such as assisted driving features, I would ask Christiana to comment on that, because I'd be very curious to hear her perspective on, you know, within her role in Audi, how she sees that evolving.
Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, user acceptance can be very high for specific functions. I think over-the-air updates, but also functions that can be booked on demand, we do see a very high acceptance from the users. So, for example, we see high acceptance for the Matrix light in, for example, Norway. Yeah, so our customers in Norway, they book Matrix light, especially in winter times, and they don't buy it for the whole year. But at the same time, as an industry, we also saw that not all functions that can be booked on demand are successful. So there are indeed some failures we could see as an industry where customers were not ready to purchase those items on demand. So I think heated seats, for example, our Audi customers wouldn't want to buy that on demand. So we do offer heated seats in our car as a feature that is not available on demand. Yeah. You're smiling, so I guess you can familiarize with that one. But I think it's also important to talk about customization. So our customers want more to also be able to customize their car, not only have the car up to date over the air or basically book functions on request, but also create a car that is more or less unique to them. So in our upcoming Q6 e-tron, for example, you can customize the appearance of the vehicle with up to 8 different light signatures by choosing them on demand. And I think that will be also a feature that will have a high attraction to customers to really differentiate their cars to neighbors' cars or to the friends' cars. And of course, it's also about innovation. I think user acceptance is always high when there is a high level of innovation linked to it. And you see that the world is actually turning faster and faster. And we as a company, but also as an industry, we do have to adapt to it. So I think when we reduce complexity for the benefit of the customer, we increase the agility and also the working methods. That's when we see customer acceptance for the outcome, as there will be a clear benefit to our customers out there.
Thank you. Please choose your next question.
So as we were talking about the customer a lot, I would go for user experience. Level one, please.
What would you consider a positive user experience in the future automobile?
A positive user experience is really a North Star for us. We think about a safe, seamless, and connected experience in the vehicle. What we focus on is thinking about the user journey from inception, which may not start in the vehicle, right? You may start your journey at home, on a tablet, on a phone, searching for the location, booking an appointment, or a restaurant reservation, for example. And the user more and more wants that experience to be seamless, that handoff between the device that you may use in the comfort of your home, that information to transition seamlessly into the vehicle, and then back again. You know, oftentimes you have the last meter issue where you may be getting off your bicycle or getting out of your car at where you've parked, you know, that vehicle, and you still need to go find your location. And so having that seamless transition back and forth from your phone or your home tablet into the vehicle and then back again is something that we think quite a bit about. How do you all think about this, Christiana?
I'm actually 100% with you, and I think it gets more and more relevant, the whole topic of ecosystem that actually we talk about when we talk about the battery electric vehicles, because then it gets even more relevant to customers to have the ecosystem in your pocket, yeah, to have the relevant app working. So when I'm driving electric since a couple of years, so I would say more than 90% electric, sometimes switching cars with colleagues. But when you drive electric, it's even more important to plan the charging stops accordingly. And of course, in your Audi, the car does it for you. So when you enter the navigation destination, the car will tell you where to stop, what's the best way to go, the best route, the best charging points. But of course, you can do this also from home by using your Audi app and creating that seamless experience and then sending basically over to your car the destination and the charging stops. And I think that will be more relevant to customers that purchase a battery electric vehicles, because, I mean, that's one of the use cases when you travel some destinations that you need to integrate the charging stops, you need to integrate possibly also stops to have lunch and then combine it with the charging. And I think having these travels seamless and smooth, I think that will be a big customer advantage. And I really see here the car as part of the ecosystem of the customer and not only as a means of transportation as it was in the past.
Thank you. Please choose your next question.
How about innovation level one?
Looking ahead, what breakthrough technologies or trends do you foresee shaping the digital car of the future in the next 5 to 10 years?
So I think one topic is clearly, and we see today already, is sustainability. So more and more customers do ask the question of sustainability, and that gets a more relevant purchase criteria than in the past. And that also links again to the topic of BEV transformation. I think that's one of the key topics of our times, and I think it will remain relevant also in the upcoming years. I think secondly, when we talk about level four driving, that will be a big topic in the upcoming years as well, which will lead to big steps in innovation. Also, when we then look into the interior of the car, because obviously when you are able to drive level four, that means the interior of the car, the whole user experience in the car gets different, and then you will be able to work in the car, you will be able to sleep, to relax, to be entertained in a completely different way. So when we design a car for the future, we go from the inside to the outside and not as in the past from the outside to the inside. And I think that's one of the biggest topics of innovation that we can think of, especially when designing and creating a car.
Those are all great points, and they also link to the points that you were making in the last question around the importance of the ecosystem And I wanted to echo that, you know, the ecosystem in innovation, in driving this innovation is really important. So to empower that full, you know, seamless journey that Christiana and I both spoke to, and to really realize the vision of a sustainable journey requires a lot of ecosystem cooperation to ensure that the relevant information can be surfaced to the user at the right time, right? Like one of the things that we experience with charging networks is, you know, ensuring that we know availability, knowing if it's functioning, if it's booked already by another consumer. And so ensuring that this is a period of adjustment, right? Where we're all adjusting to different times to recharge a vehicle, learning about the different ways that users will want to spend that downtime, but ensuring that we have all of the ecosystem working in harmony to bring the type of information that the user needs to make that seamless will really be what powers the innovation that's required to achieve that full vision for the sustainable future.
Thank you. Please choose your next question.
Should we stay with innovation one more time and go for level two? What do you think?
Sure.
Who do you predict will lead innovation in the future automotive industry, considering recent breakthroughs from major tech companies?
But I think it's difficult to say who as this one company. I think it will be more interesting to see how the tech players and the automotive world, how they interact and how they play together to bring the best innovations to the customers in the end. So I don't think it's an either or. I think, again, it will be together and creating together the best value.
I could not agree with that more. In my last role, I was working on autonomous vehicles right at the start of the hype cycle for the most recent wave of L4 technologies. And there were a couple of times there were magazine covers that talked about Silicon Valley is, you know, the new heart of the automotive world. And it was a really bold, you know, type of thing to say. And, you know, this is several years ago when there was really a lot of frenetic investment around autonomous vehicles and around, you know, newer mobility concepts like Uber and Lyft really taking hold. And I think we've all learned a tremendous amount over the last several years. And Christiana is spot on. It's not going to be one entity that drives the innovation on its own. I think there is now a really healthy appreciation for the complexity of what it takes to actually build an automobile, manufacture it, do all the rigorous safety testing that's required for a safety critical technology. That's very different than developing software for form factors like a phone, for example, that can sit in a person's pocket. And what I have seen in the course of my work at the intersection of automotive and tech is a much greater appreciation for the roles that that many parts of the ecosystem can play. There's absolutely a role for tech innovators, for sure. But that is, I think, now comes with a healthy amount of appreciation and humbleness for, you know, the role that that our developers play, for example, that all of our SoC partners play, that our automotive partners play. We all have a role to play, and nobody will succeed in a vacuum, that's for sure. So the ecosystems and partnerships are just that much more important.
Thank you. Please choose your next question.
Should we stay with innovation and finish out this category?
Yeah, let's do so.
How might advancements and innovations from the tech industry, for instance, generative AI, influence the automotive sector? What strategies can be employed to effectively integrate these technologies into vehicles?
So I can start with that. So I think one of the ways that we can think of AI impacting the automotive sector is, and there are many, many ways, and the story is still being written on how AI will influence every industry, not just the automotive industry. But one thing to be thinking about is building that digital twin, leveraging AI to build a digital twin of the vehicle will allow for development in simulation, validation of software in a development environment so that you can iterate faster, smarter, and a much less costly manner before you even create, whether that's a part, like a physical hardware part that can be tested extensively in a digital environment, or testing software, you know, running code, running simulations, seeing how, you know, a path planner performs, for example. Being able to do that in a simulated environment is just much more efficient and safe, frankly, to be able to do, and will help us speed time to production and reduce waste while also leading to better outcomes.
Yeah, I would pick up on the topic of speed, as you just mentioned. I do believe, as you said as well, that we will pick up speed by AI. It will help being faster in developing new cars. And I think we will also be faster in bringing innovation onto the street. At the same time, I think it's quite interesting to have an AI in the car, to also, when customers do have questions, have support to their questions in a very natural way. So I think it will be on the one hand side in terms of development, where we do see an impact. But at the second hand, also, we will see it from the customer side in the car when customers do have questions, and we will have this more natural interaction in the future. So I think that can be quite interesting as well.
Thank you. Please choose your next question.
Let's go to monetization level one.
What are the advantages and challenges associated with subscription-based models compared to one-time purchase models for digital and software-based features in cars? Which approach is more suitable for different types of features?
So I would probably just continue with the topic we mentioned a couple of minutes before, where I already said that function on demand is quite a big topic for our customers, especially in specific markets like Norway, where function on demand for metrics light is quite big. But on the other hand, we do see that customers do not want specific features on demand, and they expect it, especially in a premium vehicle, to be standard. I do believe that it's important to hear to the customer feedback, especially for those topics of monetization and to understand the needs in different regions. So I think what can work out very well in one area of the world might not be the right one in a different region or a different market. So I think with functions on demand, you can at one time listen quite well to the customer needs. And if you see you have basically a high booking rate, you can integrate this into new developments. But obviously, when you see that's just not what the customer wants, you can adapt the offering also at a much faster cycle than if you have it as a regular option. So I think it also helps us to be more customer-centric and listen carefully what the customer wants and needs and books in the end. So how do you see it, Gretchen? Maybe also as a customer?
That's a really good question. And I think what you said is spot on. The consumer has an expectation, certainly, you know, more premium vehicles for what should be part of the experience that they're paying for upfront versus what you might be willing to pay for on a subscription-based model. You know, I think the right approach, as you noted, depends on a lot of factors. You know, what does this feature cost? How frequently is it used and updated? What type of value does it provide to the consumer? And, you know, I think we are used to paying for subscriptions. Certainly, you know, dramatic uptick in that for all of us as consumers for, you know, our media content, just your video and how we all consume content these days has gone through quite a shift. So as consumers, we're used to that. We're not as used to it in the automotive context. So I feel like the story is still being written here. But we are accustomed to subscription models in many parts of our lives, and we accept that costs should evolve over time, particularly for features that improve. You know, if you're able to provide over-the-air updates, you know, for example, like a map that is upgraded every 2 weeks, there's value in that. There's value in continuous improvement that the consumer can grasp. Why is this a four-fee service? I think, you know, the other advantage for the entities that are producing the type of content or feature is that you can better match your revenue to cost as if you can offer it in a subscription-based model. But certainly still quite a bit of learning here to do as, you know, cars become more and more capable of improving over time, and having over-the-air updates that allow for the vehicle as a form factor to improve after it leaves the lot. So I think we still have a lot to learn, and I'm excited for all the changes that will come.
Yeah, and I think it keeps the car fresh in the end. I mean, it's good. Yeah, so with functions on demand, the customer doesn't have the impression to own an old car. But you can always keep it fresh, always adjust it to your needs. And of course, for us as an automaker, it gives us also the chance to stay in contact with our customer, which is also quite important to be in contact, to interact and to learn from each other.
Thank you. Please choose your next question.
Let's stick with monetization.
Okay.
Over the past year, there's been some debate regarding customers needing to pay for usage of pre-installed features in their vehicles, such as heated seats. How do you distinguish between essential features that should be included without extra charges and genuine value-added services that warrant additional costs for customers?
Well, I think that leads us again to the topic mentioned before. I think especially for premium vehicles, the customer does have a certain expectation what he or she can expect in the car, and isn't ready to pay, as some customers would say, a second time for something that is already in the car, because obviously heated seats, you already have everything it takes in the car, and then you just switch it on or off, basically. So I think when the customer gets the impression to be fooled, to pay a second time for something he or she paid already with the base car, then I think it will not work and it will not create customer satisfaction. I think especially with everything that's digital and that basically is then coming over the air, that's something where additional use cases are seen, as Gretchen mentioned before, the topic of maps that are updated on a regular basis. Here, that's clearly a customer benefit. And I think here the customers are prepared to pay additional for having that user benefit. So I think it really depends a little bit when we talk about hardware. Does the customer have the impression of paying a second time? And that's obviously not what anyone wants.
It's time for our last question. What are your expectations for the next IAA Mobility, and what are you looking forward to?
What I'm really excited about, this is my first IAA, so I'm really excited to attend and see our partners and see some of the innovations that the ecosystem is putting on display. It's a great time to connect with the broader ecosystem and all of our partners. So I'm really excited about that and the energy that these types of events bring. I think what's also really important is we have been, emerging from the global pandemic, to see the amount of just energy and thought and acceleration of the types of software experiences that we're all consuming in a way that the pandemic really accelerated. So I'm excited to see how that overlays with the mobility space, not just for the vehicle use cases, but even beyond. We've become very multimodal societies. And so it'll be exciting to see the innovation across the mobility spectrum. Christiana, how about you?
Well, I really like the concept of the open space. 2 years ago at the IAA in Munich, I think that was really great to interact with customers, with people, also with the people that wouldn't want to visit a traditional car fair, but that would be in the streets, it would be in the city and just drop by. So I think the open space really created a different atmosphere and reached also a different audience that in the years before. So I really like this because it created much more dialogue with the customers. But also, I think it's great to meet automotive colleagues and friends like you, Gretchen. I mean, we didn't meet in person so far. And I think it's great to meet then at the IAA in person for the first time. So I'm really looking forward to that personal interaction. And of course, also seeing innovation and having the pulse of being there in person after all the pandemic years that are behind us.
Same, I can't wait.
Powerful insights. That's all the time we have for today, unfortunately. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the IAA Mobility Visionary Club. We are so close to IAA Mobility 2023 now. The IAA Summit will be happening from September 5th through 8th at Munich Exhibition Center. Our next episodes will be recorded live at the event on Friday, September 8th, the Visionary Club Day. Come join us and watch in Hall A2. The IAA Mobility Visionary Club podcast live sessions will be hosted by Sarah Harmon. Stay tuned. If you liked what you heard, please consider giving us a review. To stay up to date on all things IAA Mobility, follow us on our social channels. They're linked in the description for you. The IAA Mobility Visionary Club podcast is produced in cooperation with our knowledge partner, the Boston Consulting Group. See you next episode.